This episode is brought to you by Summer School Electronics. With pedals like the Snow Day Delay, the Pep Rally Fuzz, the Trash Panda, and my personal favorite, the Science Fair, which is two classic dirt pedals in one with a mid-boosted overdrive on one side, a black lab rat circuit on the other, and a blend knob to blend between them to find the perfect classic stacked dirt sound you're looking for, it's hard not to find something you'll love. Mark builds all of his pedals by hand in Syracuse, New York, where he also works as a full-time educator. In addition to the super fun graphics on their pedals, Mark also offers custom artwork. Want your dog's face on a pedal? He can do it. Want your face on a pedal? He can make that happen too. Go over to summerschoolelectronics.com and make sure to tell them that 40 Watt Podcast sent you. Forty Watters, welcome to another episode of the 40 Watt Podcast. I am your host, Philip. This week, I'm joined by a guest that I met at NAMM this year. But before we jump right into our conversation, I first need to talk about one of the sponsors of this podcast. You've already heard about a couple at the beginning of the episode if you're not a Patreon supporter. Incidentally, if those ads annoy you, you can avoid them as a Patreon supporter. But what you can't avoid, because you all need to know about, is Barry over at Grez Guitars. Barry is making some of the coolest guitars out there with his Mendocino, and which is over here over my left shoulder if you're watching the podcast on YouTube. I also have a Folsom, which is actually out of frame over here. I think Barry makes some of the coolest guitars. Now he's making a bass six to go along with his full-scale bass and his short-scale bass. And if those aren't your thing, Barry actually builds custom arch tops and acoustics, whatever you want. Go check him out over at Grez Guitars on Instagram or on the website. I think you're going to find something you love. I really appreciate the support that Barry throws this podcast. He's become a really good friend of mine, and I appreciate him believing in what I'm doing here because I really believe in what he's doing. So go check him out. Links are down in the description below. Now, having gotten through that, going to jump into this conversation. Today, welcome to the podcast, Terrence. What's going on, Terrence? Terrence Not O'Brien, much. We'll say the full name.
Yeah. I don't think it'll mean that much to anybody, but, you know, sure. Terrence O'Brien.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do the full thing.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Man, I'm pumped to have this conversation. We've been talking about this for a while. And we're going to talk about, we'll mention a couple of things. When I met you at NAMM. You were there covering for Engadget.
Yep.
I think I said that right. Engadget. Engadget. I just want to make it sound funny, to be honest.
I think it sounds funny enough on its own. The actual way, just Engadget is a really weird word.
Yeah, it's an interesting word. So you are, and you're doing some other stuff now. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. But essentially, you're a musician, you're into electronics, and you're a writer, and you cover things in this industry, in this medium known as print.
Yes.
I'm going to put air quotes around that. It's funny because everybody thinks print is dead, forgetting that I am a librarian as my day job. I don't think print is dead.
It's not.
Actually, I have statistics to prove it as well. So I'm sure you do as well. So how have you been since NAMM?
I've been better, I think, as we discussed a little bit leading into this. I am the now former managing editor of Engadget, unfortunately.
Yeah.
For those who don't pay that much attention to the media industry, things aren't great right now. We got roped up in the last round of layoffs in the industry. And look, I'm not going to pretend to be happy about it, but it is what it is. I lasted there for 13 years, which is absolutely insane. Not just in media in general, but especially in like tech media. So it was bound to happen eventually. And, but yeah, that's, where I was. And now I am freelance for the time being.
Yeah. That's pretty wild. I don't think I've done anything in my life for 13 years, short of like breathing and eating, sleeping, you know, all the things you do your entire life if you remain sane. I'm really close. Actually, this year is this my 13th year in libraries? So yeah, I'm real close.
Okay.
So hopefully, you know, hopefully I make it past 13 because it's an unlucky number, obviously. But so you write about tech and that goes into your, you know, life as a musician as well and your interest there. Yeah, I've read some of your articles you wrote for Engadget. It's very much around technology in the music industry or in the recording industry and those kinds of avenues. How'd you get into this kind of, were you a musician first and then got into writing, or did it go the other way?
Honestly, it's hard to tell. Like, I want to say I probably got into writing first because when I was younger, even like talking like grammar school days, I would constantly like write stories or write whatever. So I wrote a lot. And I don't think I actually picked up the guitar like seriously until maybe like seventh grade. So,
okay.
Writing came first, but as a profession, you know, the writing was like a much later thing. I started in IT, like, and another thing where I got laid off and decided while I had some unemployment coming my way, I was going to take a stab at that whole writing for a living thing that I dreamed that I might do one day, and somehow managed to make it work. Wasn't always easy, but I did it. I got it.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to break into, actually, writing in general, whether you're writing articles or, books or whatever it is you write, unless you're in my hometown and you want to be the managing editor of our newspaper that is dying to try and stay a daily. I don't know what they're doing. But I've lived in this town for, this is 4 years now, and we're on the fourth editor since I moved here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what's the hometown paper?
Should we call them Starkville Daily News? It's the Starkville Daily News. It's a small paper, but it got bought out years ago by a bigger corporation that has no idea what happens in Starkville, Mississippi.
Yep.
And so they make decisions that don't have anything to do with Starkville, Mississippi, or how to build a better paper here or build better relationships here. And so they just keep hiring talented but under-experienced editors, because they can afford to pay them almost nothing. And it's ludicrous to see that part of the industry. The newspaper industry is really struggling, yes, more so than anywhere.
I mean, that sounds very similar. We have our own hometown local paper, which is weird to say when I live in New York City, but
right.
Staten Island, where I am from, born and raised, is the only borough that has its own daily newspaper that is dedicated to the borough.
Really?
The Staten Island Advance, and they got bought out quite a while ago at this point, again, by like big news corporation that owns like NJ.com for like the local whatever Jersey paper it was originally, and a handful of other like sort of like city specific things. And yeah, they have run it into the ground, which is not surprising. It's, I'm not gonna pretend it was great to begin with, but they really don't. It's just all about milking whatever last little bit of money you can out of a thing before you officially just call it quits.
Yeah, it's like the death rattle a little bit, you know.
Unfortunately, I think if you look at the media landscape, that's almost everybody though. Every site, every property is just like, how can we milk one last dollar out of this before it ceases being completely relevant?
I think that's part of what's killing the press industry, is that part of it is that we've seen it in the publishing industry, not the press publishing, but as in the novel and the, you know, the big book publishing industry. We've seen it in the music industry. The barrier for entries have been taken away by the proliferation of the internet, and people didn't know what to do with it. Instead, they, like a lot of big companies, they dug their heels in thinking, no, we can do it the way we've always done it. We don't have to modernize and change our approach. And they're dying.
Yep. It's sad.
Yeah, it really is. So, but moving on from there, but that's not to say print's dead. Obviously, a few people have done a really good job of turning it around. I always look to someone like Jason Verlinde with Fretboard Journal and the work he's done. He's still putting out one of the best guitar magazines, but what he had to do is say, hey, we're not going to put it out monthly because that's too often, too spendy. So let's put it out quarterly. Let's make it mean something. Let's make it look amazing. Let's, you know, up the level of the articles in there instead of trying to get the next new thing all the time. Let's instead do some deeper dive articles and do some really meaningful stuff. My favorite magazine, sorry, Jason, I do love Fretboard Journal, but my favorite magazine, No Depression, had to make that change years ago as well. They actually closed for a while.
I'm not familiar with that.
The same thing. So No Depression was the original alt country Americana magazine.
Oh, okay.
I discovered so much great music through that magazine, and now they do a quarterly type thing. And I have not subscribed to it though. I actually found out about that relatively recently that they revived through that. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're able to keep going. So I'm really excited about it, but they adapted to the, to the changes.
So it's a, I'm glad that they adapted though. The quarterly thing is great. I hope that some other people out there figure it out so that I can maybe continue to be in the media business instead of having to have a career change at the age of 41.
Yeah, I feel like the beginnings of that change was in the blog space.
Yeah.
People were blogging more, and you got bloggers, and you got people that got famous as bloggers, whether they deserved it or not. I'm not going to dive down that rabbit hole.
Let's not.
Because that's a whole depressing space. Of my favorite and the self-publishing industry is interesting because we see that in the library space. Obviously, I have to be very cautious around the self-publishing space for things we add to our collection. One, they hide now very well. They'll have like a shell company. It's like it doesn't really exist except to give them a publisher name to put on the book, even though it's still self-published. And we see things like self-published medical texts. And I'm like, oh, God, no. Yeah, it's awful. So in that shift, how have you seen in 13 years the shifts you've seen? What do you make of it?
That's such a complicated question, man. I think, you know, when I started writing, I started at the site called Switched that no longer exists. And it was like this supposed to be a sister site to Engadget, actually. Their pitch was like, we're a tech site, but for like middle America kind of thing. Like, we're not like the real nerds. We want to make it a little bit more broad based. Like, the people who read Engadget, we want their moms and dads to read this site.
Gotcha.
And I think they hired exactly the wrong people to make that happen, seeing as how one of them was me. And, you know, it was a fun place to work. It was fine. And I think what people realized pretty quickly, it's why it's gone, is that ultimately the whole like tech blog thing was going to collapse anyway. And that was going to have to kind of become the mainstream version of itself. The day when cell phones and laptops and the latest iPhone was purely a thing of interest to the nerdiest of nerds changed pretty quickly.
Right.
So that went away. I was able to move over to Engadget because one of the guy who ended up taking over as editor in chief at Engadget after there was an exodus was the other writer that was hired with when I joined at Switched. So like the first two writers were Tim Stevens and myself, and Tim Stevens went on to be editor in chief of Engadget. And then he was at CNET doing what is the car thing they had? Their car like vertical that I now can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, I know because I used to see it. I don't remember it though.
And now I'm gonna feel really bad. Tim Stevens is a good friend. He's a buddy of mine. He's at my wedding, and I feel really bad that I now can't remember the name of this thing that he created.
But yeah, I was gonna try to very quietly Google it to try to find it. But I can't find the name that quickly.
Yeah.
I found plenty on Tim Stevens, but
he's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was able to make the switch over there, and that's when we kind of started to think about, well, what's the next evolution of this? Because the Engadget that I joined that was kind of on the way out was still that like super nerdy, every headline had like acronyms and specs in it that were borderline indecipherable unless you were really, really in the weeds on this stuff. And the people that I came up with there, kind of figured out that, like, no, we have to, like, adjust, and we can't do the, like, blurry cam photos of nonsense, 150 words, and a headline that's, like, obvious clickbait. And so we, you know, started shifting and doing more approachable, started taking ourselves a little bit more seriously. Whether that's a good or a bad thing probably depends on when you started reading Engadget. Some people really liked the overt snarkiness that the old site had, and were a little bit upset when we decided to start taking ourselves seriously and, like, holding ourselves to standards and things like that. But, like, I think the bigger shift has been trying to figure out how to stay afloat now that everything has kind of been flattened. You see even, like, the major outlets do it. I mean, Vice is now basically not a thing. And
which is wild to me, because that was another magazine back when it was a print magazine that I grew up on. And then it had a web presence that was pretty powerful for a good minute there. And then nothing.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported in part by String Joy Strings. I'm a snob, at least that's what people tell me. I'm never okay with good enough, and that's where String Joy Strings come in. They're better than good enough. They're the best. String Joy are making some of the finest strings available today right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee. They offer custom sets, balanced tension, coated strings, the works. If you need it, they can probably make it happen. You should be using String Joy Strings, and if you're going to order from them, you really could help this podcast out by clicking the affiliate link down in the description or show notes below. You get amazing strings, I get a little bit of that back to help the show keep going. It's a win-win situation. Get your String Joy Strings today.
And here's the thing that I'm going to say about Vice, and this is, I feel bad because this is going to be saying some bad things about them, but part of the reason Vice survived for so long, though, I think, is in part because it kind of preyed on people's inexperience as writers, or their desire to have the name Vice on their resume.
Sure.
I have heard plenty of stories about how poorly they paid and how overworked everybody there was. And it's kind of a shame to think that, like, a brand that big would have that problem. But eventually I think it was obvious that it was going to run into the ground, because that was the only way they were able to scrape by in the first place, was kind of pay the rank and file people not great, and then throw money at all these big projects and hope that it took off, you know, all the TV stuff and whatever too, like, and it never really worked.
I forgot completely they were even tied into TV, but you're right.
Yeah, they had an HBO show. I think they even, like, tried to do, like, a dedicated channel at some point or something like that.
Yes, they did.
They took big swings, and I appreciate the big swings. I really do. But they didn't land. They didn't take off. And so they just kind of ate it completely. But even other people you're seeing are struggling. The New York Times bought Wirecutter basically because they were like, well, affiliate links, that's where we're going to make our money. And unfortunately, that's also not going to be a thing anymore very, very soon, unfortunately. That's any site that's relying on affiliate revenue to, like, keep them afloat, that they're going to fail.
Look, as long as Wordle survives, I don't
care.
That's
all that matters.
I just need Wordle to make it. So So print is an interesting thing. Even online news sources are trying really hard to figure out how to, because none of this works for free. You've got to make money somewhere to make this happen. And there's so many other ways to get content out here. Look at a podcast that I'm putting out. You know, I'm not saying that I am an expert in the field or that you should listen to me. I'm just a guy with a microphone who talks to other people with microphones about things that we get super nerdy about.
Yeah.
But, you know, between YouTube and podcasts and for a long time it was Twitter, may it rest in peace.
Yeah.
Or pieces, as it is. you know, that was the way people got their news. And so it completely shifted the dynamic of everything to this really weird world we're living in. I'm curious, as you're moving on from Engadget and you're doing some new stuff, you're working freelance, got some things coming up in the horizon that we can't talk about yet because, you know, it's bad juju to talk yep. about them before, you know, anything is in writing, as it were. Yep. Do you see any of that shifting back at all? Do you see the role of the journalist, not just the blogger, coming back to be some of importance?
I think, you know, there's something that you can get out of print or, you know, the written word mm-hmm. that you can't get out of a video and that you can't get out of a podcast even. And, you know, listen, I love YouTube. I watch plenty of like YouTube creators. I listen to plenty of podcasts. They're tons of fun, but there's a depth that I think you can get out of writing that you can't get in other mediums. It's much easier to have an aside and kind of like lead your reader without seeming like you're rambling and like just going off on like tirades. I find, at least I am a writer, so obviously I'm biased, but like I think that there's something to the organization and depth that is unique to print and the written word. I can't imagine too many people sitting around and like watching a hour long YouTube video on a regular basis. Like, not that there aren't YouTube creators out there doing that. Not that this right. is probably not going to end up as an hour long YouTube video, but that's like, that's not what people go to YouTube for. And
right. No, it's not. It's evidenced by the size of my YouTube channel, that is not what people go to YouTube for.
I also think that, like, and again, maybe this is me kind of betraying my age and all of that, but like I can read on the train. I don't want to watch a YouTube video on my phone while I'm commuting. Not that I really commute. If I'm sitting at home and like with my kids, I don't want to have a phone in my face while I'm like watching a video. I'll put in an earbud and listen to a podcast while it's bath time or something. That's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's a unique medium that I obviously love. And I feel like you're yeah. a librarian. You love the written word too. You can appreciate this.
I do. I really appreciate it, which is odd because I'm a librarian who primarily listens to audiobooks now. that's just who I am as a person. It has nothing to do with my not loving the written word. It has everything to do with the chaos of my schedule and mm-hmm. my mental state. And that is the medium that works to keep me reading.
Yeah. And there's no shame in that.
No. I just don't sit down for long enough periods of time where I'm not focused on other things to mm-hmm. also read a book. Whereas I can listen to an audiobook while I'm mowing the lawn, or like I've got to drive next week. As this episode comes out, I've got to drive to a conference in Ohio and I'm going to listen to an audiobook the Absolutely. Entire 10-hour drive, you know, and maybe I'll actually finish Dune, which is my current project.
Oh my, I'm sorry.
yeah.
I'll keep my hot take on Dune to myself before I make any more.
Oh yeah, enemies. Yeah. Because I've never seen any of the movies. I know very little about it besides its influence on Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I was gonna, as a good librarian, read the book before I see the movies. So
makes sense. I understand. Yeah. You know, it's a thing that I will often do, if only because I find that if I watch the movie before I read the book, I just won't read mm-hmm. the book. I'll never go yeah. back.
That's fair. That's extremely fair.
But like the audiobooks, though, they're great. It's just like I'll always have an audiobook and a print book out from the library, so I can either listen while I'm doing chores or, you know, driving or whatever, once I've kind of run through all my podcasts. But then
yeah.
at night, I do like to sit down and read a book, sometimes an actual physical book, not even on my e-reader, like a real Neanderthal.
Yeah. Something tells me Neanderthals didn't read books, but that's
no,
just me.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, I think there is an importance to the written word that you get a lot out of. I miss the days of Guitar Player magazine.
Absolutely.
I was one of those lunatics that read Guitar Player magazine backwards. I would always start at the last article in the magazine because the last one was always some kind of guitar tech or repair tip or something about signal flow. It was never about the latest, greatest gear. It mm-hmm. was always about helpful ideas for, because apparently that was the least wanted material in Guitar Player. So that's why it's in the back, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not going to put your best article as your last article. Well, I thought always the last articles were the best ones. So I would start there.
Well, that's like, it's like the practical advice that actually like appeals to the real nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
And
total nerd.
Like the stuff earlier in the magazine is all the like gear and celebrity interview stuff, which is like, I love, I'm not going to pretend I don't, like, I'm not going to say I'm above being a shameless consumer of things. If a new pedal comes out and I'm like, ooh, I want the pedal. I want that shiny thing. Give it to me. What just happened?
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of lag.
Yeah, you just completely froze up on me.
Yeah. Yeah, you did for me as well. I'm trying to mark the time. So I'm going to grab a pencil.
I've been in the midst of this trying to sort my frame, which is now all sorts of messed up.
I know, I get it. And what we may do is if we continue to have some lag issues, like if it, because right there, it actually got to, like before I was able to just keep things going and I got the gist of what you were saying. I have nothing to write in? That is not, oh, no, there's my field notes.
I was going to say, I think you have the opposite problem of me. I have a drawer with about 70 pens next to me.
Well, I've got something to write with. I had nothing to write on.
No, that's right.
That's the problem.
Always on my desk, right next to me.
See, first video, and what we may do will be weird if it continues with it already being so late, we may hard cut this part of the conversation and maybe try again.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think we're approaching sort of the end of this one anyway.
We've also gotten off on a weird tangent that has nothing to do with music. We
and
started somewhere that had kind of to do with music.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. I have the hip pocket transition ready.
There you go.
To go. So 6 minutes into second video. All right. So let's see if I can find a pickup point. We can finish this point and see how we do with the connection. Because, of course, now that we're not talking about anything important, it's working perfectly.
Exactly. That's how this goes.
That's technology. You know this.
Oh, I'm aware. I've been told many times that I should just not be allowed to touch it.
So, and then pick up at 8. 8:15. So I am actually a little bit the same way when it comes to watching the movie first or reading a book. So when the Harry Potter series was still coming out actively, mm-hmm. I was just a little too old to read the early ones, but the movies were already out. So I just watched the movies for the first two. And I've still never gone back and read those first two books, even though some people told me, oh, it's close enough. You're fine. You got the gist of it. You don't need to go back. And some people were like, oh, my God, how can you even bother without having read those first two books? People lose their mind on me. I'm like, well, I saw the movie. I don't need to go back because, yes, it's a little different. But I feel like I've already lived this.
Yeah, you got the gist of it at the very least.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm about to hurt my nerd cred some more and say, never read Harry Potter. Don't care.
You know what? It's one of those things that's totally okay. I'm not going to I'm not going to completely fault you for that one. It's a great book series. It's a good movie series. It's interesting the life that it's managing to continue to have. Yeah. It's still the only book. It's the only series that we maintain extra copies of to replace them as they're worn out 20 years later.
That makes 100% sense. If you go to Engadget, I can't remember how long ago it ran, but there's a great piece by Jessica Condit, who is kind of like the lead gaming reporter over there. And she has this whole piece about how much Harry Potter means to her. And the like game that came out that I can't remember the name of last year.
Hogwarts Legacy.
That's it.
I only know because my wife is currently playing it.
But she has some very strong feelings, and it's a whole piece about why she's able to continue to stand by it. And I highly recommend that people read it. It's a top-notch read.
Okay.
She's a wonderful writer. But yeah, I'm like a bad stereotyped nerd. Like, I don't care and don't do many of the stereotype nerd things. Like, I don't really care for Star Wars all that much.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I didn't read Harry Potter. I read some of the first Dune book. I did not finish it. I'm not even a big gamer, really. I kind of like fell off around Super Nintendo years. I did get a PlayStation 4 at some point. So like I got back into it a little bit, but I don't know. I've always at Engadget, and even before that at Switch, was always the nerdy guy who was kind of outside the nerd circle. So my intro to technology was through my father, who got out of the Navy in like late 70s, and he was an electrician on the boat, and he saw that like computers were going to be the next big thing, basically, and is like, this is how I'm gonna make my living and transition. And so from the very early days, he was in IT, when finding an IT guy was like a big deal,
right?
And so we always had computers in and out of my house. I have like, they're still in my parents' basement, like a VAX.
Oh no!
Like from a bank from like 1981. I built my first computer at like the age of 11 or something like that.
That's about the same time, because I'm a couple of years older than you, and I built my first one at 13.
That's when I built my second one.
Yeah, so I feel that entirely.
We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
So, but I was always like, I was nerdy. I knew tech, but I was never like the nerd about all of the like tech stuff. So like everybody else at Engadget would geek out about graphics cards or whatever, but I'd be the guy who was like, Moog's got a new thing. Maybe you should write about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how you moved into eventually covering a lot of the music technology and audio technology that was coming out. That was really where your nerddom sat.
Yeah. I mean, it was, for years, I had kind of pushed us to do a little bit more of that stuff. And this does kind of also tie back to our talk about like how the media industry had to adjust. And I was somebody who was pushing for us to do more niche things that spoke to and catered to an audience where you could nerd out.
Yeah.
Because I think we've reached a point where you can't really nerd out that much about a phone. There's only so much. Like, everybody has a pretty damn powerful phone in their pocket.
Yep.
It's not something you can get that nerdy about anymore. It's like, well, the place you find the pockets of nerds is when you like target these niches. We've got a guy, Steve Dent, who's our camera guy, and he's a super nerd about cameras. Talked to him for hours about cameras. I asked him for camera buying advice, and it turned into an hour-long conversation I was not prepared for.
Yep.
So
it becomes a dissertation that you didn't know you needed to start taking notes for. No. That's what happens when you ask someone who's truly passionate about something. I feel bad for the people who come to me for questions about, hey, I've got a kid who's maybe getting into guitar. What should I do? I don't feel bad for the hour and a half lecture that I'm about to give them. I feel bad, though, for them having to sit through it. I don't feel bad for doing it. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's like, I am thoroughly enjoying doing this.
Exactly.
I feel bad that you were clearly unprepared for it, but I'm really enjoying myself right now.
Hey, that's exactly 100%.
But yeah, so that was like, I tried to push us to do more niche things and like speak to smaller audiences and reach out to where the nerds still existed. And Billy Steele, who is now kind of like Engadget's audio guy, he does headphones and speakers and stuff like that.
Sure.
And James True, who was unfortunately laid off at the same time as me. Mm. We all joined Engadget around the same time. And because Billy is down in North Carolina, not far from Asheville, he already kind of had some connections in the industry there. And James True got his start, actually, at Computer Music. So, like, both of these guys knew the music stuff pretty well. And Billy, I don't know for how long, I don't remember the name of the band or anything, but for a while actually had a band and was a touring guitarist. Things that I have never done. I haven't been in a band since college. I have played music live in front of human beings once since college, and that was only a couple of years ago. It did not go great. So
traumatic experience. We don't really need to cover that PTSD.
It was not great. May never play live again. Was that bad? But so I always tried to push them to do more of that stuff, to cover more of that stuff. And, you know, we'd kind of do it in fits and starts and like sort of dabble here and there. But Billy was a guitarist first and never felt really comfortable with the synth things. And James True, being based in Europe, little inside baseball stuff is, depending on where a company is located or where their things are, might make it very difficult for people to cover them.
Yeah.
So like, if we had a writer who was in Canada that we wanted to do a review of a phone, straight up just might not be able to do it because they wouldn't be able to send him a review unit kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So at some point, I guess this is 2019, Korg was getting ready to drop the Minilog XD.
Yeah.
And they offered Billy the first review unit. Like, we would have had an exclusive, and he just was like, I don't necessarily feel super comfortable with it. Do you want it? And I went, yes, I will review this thing. I've never written a review of a synthesizer in my life, but if Korg's gonna offer us an exclusive on a thing,
we
say yes.
Yeah.
And so I wrote that review, we did a video, and it did surprisingly well. And so they went, you can do another one. And I was like, yes, please. Just keep coming. And so I spent the next several years just kind of like pushing the boundaries to see what I could get away with in terms of like music gear coverage. You know, I think I found what our niche was eventually, mostly mainstream hobbyist stuff, mostly synthesizers. As much as I hate to say it, because I really do love it. I did like the review of the Chase Bliss Habit, and
oh yeah,
I love that pedal. It's great. I'm honestly very proud of the review. Didn't go over so well. Our audience was clearly not that interested. I pushed it too far.
Yeah. Which honestly, for that one, that I'm surprised, because you're already doing all these synth things. And I say this as someone who adores Joel and Chase Bliss, and I've somehow started to gather Chase Bliss pedals that I pay for with my own money. They send me nothing because I'm too small for that. But I sort of have this feeling that Chase Bliss, I won't say left guitarists behind, but they stopped feeling like they had to 100% cater to guitarists along a while back. And it feels like they've really embraced synth players and, you know, noise producers and people who just want to make atmospheric, interesting soundscapes. And I say none of that with any denigration, because that's absolutely such a cool vibe. And I wish I could make chill lo-fi beats. I wish that was my thing. I wish I was good at it. I go to sleep to them sometimes. My wife doesn't dig it, so I don't do it all the time. But when it's just me, absolutely, that's what I'm listening to. I'm surprised that, you know, the Habit didn't maybe do as well.
Yeah. I think them reaching out to that audience, though, makes perfect sense, though.
Yeah.
Like, I get what you're saying about them leaving, you know, kind of leaving guitarists behind because they're doing much more esoteric, weird things.
Sure.
But their pedals have always been complicated and nerdy. And I think that kind of thing really appeals to the synth guy and, like, the weird noise music producer. And so they saw, like, basically an untapped market that was already using their stuff anyway. They were like, well, maybe if we make things that cater to them, we've got a whole new world opens up to us.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, I think the guitar industry and music industry in general, any one of these little niches, has the same problem that a lot of the media is like, well, we have to expand our horizons. We got to keep figuring out how we're going to grow and, you know, attract new users. It's a little bit different, obviously, for gear. And I think it's probably really different for music gear, especially because I think, you know, if I buy a $400 Chase Bliss pedal and 2 years, 3 years later, I have to replace it, I'm going to be fucking pissed and never buy a Chase Bliss pedal again.
Yeah, I'm going to be mad. I'm not going to be real happy about dropping $350, $400 again a few years later.
Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, a customer that might buy one thing once and then you never get them again for 20 years or whatever it is. I mean, I'm still playing the same, not my original Big Muff, but I have the second Big Muff that I bought in 2000, I want to say.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's still alive. It's still.
Wait, is it a big box one?
Yes.
Do you actually step on it?
Yes.
And it still works.
It still works.
That's unbelievable. You've not replaced the switch or anything like that.
I've done nothing to it.
Cheers to you, my friend, because that is rarefied air to have a big box Big Muff that you've been using that long and it is not broken. Not saying they're shoddy quality, but, you know, there's something about those enclosures and the switches they use. They don't hold up under scrutiny.
No, this was, I think, probably one of the things that allows this one to survive, though, is this was one of the first ones when they moved manufacturing back to New York. So, so it was one of the first, like, off the line when they first brought it back here. I had a Big Muff before that, black Russian model that I love. And I feel like a piece of me died when that pedal went away. But that lasted, I think, 4 or 5 years. And then it just, nothing. Every so often, I still eye them on Reverb. I'm like, ooh, can I bring myself to pay $280 for this big box Big Muff?
See.
The answer is no, I can't.
No, the answer is no. I own exactly one Big Muff circuit pedal, and it's the, this is a non-paid for sponsorship, but I will talk good about them. I have the Rude Tech by Jesse Rue, the 3-muff 14 that's three different muff circuits in one enclosure, and I adore that pedal, but that's the only Big Muff I own. That's it. That's all I need. That's all the one I want.
That is fair.
Yeah. So you start doing the, so you're writing about audio and music stuff, especially in the synth world, which is a world I'm starting to get into in the last couple of years. Kind of picked up a unit in a trade, picked up another one sort of cheap. And then before I know it, I'm staring at vintage Junos and trying to figure out if I can justify one. The answer is no.
No.
Do I stop looking? No, I do not stop looking. But at some point, did you want to like get back to guitar stuff, and did it just not feel like Engadget was the place to do it, or did that work out?
It often felt like it wasn't the place to do it. I did want to get back to it a little bit. You know, guitar is my first love. I'll be straight and just say, like, I'm not a great guitarist. I'm a pretty mediocre guitarist. I definitely fall in that more pedals than talent kind of category.
Well, that is just being real. That's the majority of guitarists.
Yeah,
that is.
Also when I came up and who I was as well, you know, I didn't idolize like the guitar god people. I'm going to say another thing that's probably you might boot me off the show, but like, I fucking hated Stevie Ray Vaughan so much.
Oh, no, kicked, you're out. Sorry, we're closing this session. We're done here. No, I adored Stevie Ray Vaughan, but I get it. I totally get it.
Lots of people do it. Like, I don't, in retrospect, I'm okay with it. I don't hate him the way I did when I was in high school. Like, for sure. There was definitely the visceral anti-anything that seemed too flashy, too of the older generation kind of thing. And I'm not a guy who hates the blues either. It wasn't like I'm out on all blues. Frankly, one of the biggest influences on my playing is probably B.B. King. I've seen him multiple times. Love him with every fiber of my being. Buddy Guy, I love. I've seen him a bunch. So it's not like I didn't. I could never get with Stevie Ray Vaughan. Probably the only like stereotypical like guitar guy I was really in love with was Hendrix. But I loved Hendrix because he was weird.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess similar token, I was a huge Tom Morello fan, and anything Tom Morello did was like, he wrote incredible riffs and he made weird noise. And it was like two things that I love most.
Because he was a synth DJ who happened to play guitar, let's be honest, and is beautiful in the way he did it. To tell you the truth, though, I was similar. I didn't idolize any particular guitar player for a long time. I've said this on the podcast before, so my listeners will have heard this before. But I used to get that question that we all get. Oh, who's your favorite guitar player? Who's your biggest influence? And I had no answers because I listened to songwriters. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about being the big flashy guitar player. Which is to this day why, yes, I have a couple of fast licks and I have a couple of licks I'm pretty proud of, but only a handful because I really don't care about doing that. I don't care about the 5-minute guitar solo. Eventually, I did pick one just to have one, and I just told people Jeff Beck, and people seemed to leave me alone when I said that, which is great. I love Jeff Beck, but I can't even tell you that I listened to Jeff Beck more than I listened to Stevie Ray Vaughan. I just had to pick somebody, and he was awesome. I liked him. Let's go with that.
Yeah, I admire your willingness to just be like, you know what, we'll make this conversation simple. It's Jeff Beck. It's fine. And just like walk away and have an answer. Versus this is one of these places where you get the nerdy hour long dissertation where I'm like, well, I don't have a favorite guitarist, but it's all of these things and all of these guys. And this is what that's where I'm like. But it was Kurt Cobain, and it was also Johnny Greenwood, and it was also, you know.
Yeah, meanwhile, I just wanted to end the conversation and go back to playing guitar.
Yeah. We got off track again. But yeah, I tried to get some of the guitar stuff in at Engadget, and it was always a little bit tough. You know, there were a handful of things that I was able to kind of squeeze in here and there. We used to have like a reader question column, and somebody like asked for like a suggestion for like modeling amps and stuff. And so I was able to like work some of that stuff in. And the second lowest review score ever handed out by Engadget, I am the author of the two lowest scoring reviews ever.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's the thing I'm very proud of, by the way. The two lowest scoring reviews in Engadget history are both authored by me. And one of them is the oh, what the hell is the name of the is it the Jammy? It's one of those like MIDI guitar, like portable things.
Yeah.
And
let me see.
It's not the Jammy. It's the other one. Why am I blanking? It like comes apart and it's supposed to fit in like a bag. like a backpack.
Oh, is that one of the relatively new ones too? I'm not going to remember this.
Yeah, it's from a couple of years ago. It's not the Jammy. It's the other one, whatever it is. Or is it the Jammy? And am I thinking the Jam Stick? It doesn't matter. Look, I'm going to be frank with everybody.
Yeah.
Both of these things are terrible. Don't give them your money, okay? So like, yeah, it was like this, basically a guitar that was supposed to be able to like come apart and fit in your carry-on luggage so that you could go play guitar in your hotel room and like you pull it out and you snap it back together and it has effects pedal modeling and amp modeling and stuff built into it.
So hold on. I found it. So I'm going to give the headline because I found the article. Jammy's digital guitar is a futuristic idea let down by today's tech. The dream of an all-in-one electric guitar experience that fits in a carry-on is still just that, a dream.
And frankly, that's me
being nice about it.
Being diplomatic about it. there is a video in there. If anybody wants to go read this, there's a video in which I just play more or less the same lick back to back on my actual guitar and on this thing. And you,
yeah,
it's. I will say though. One of the dangers in doing these reviews, by the way, is that you can go a little bit mad with power sometimes when you realize you actually have some. So the lowest scoring review ever is that I wrote was this like Fisher Price baby monitor thing. I killed it. It has been erased from the internet. You cannot find any trace of it whatsoever other than my
what?
They erased the press release from the website and everything. And then the Jammy, they reached out to me like a month or so after the review went up and told me that they named one of the new firmware release in my honor.
That's awesome.
Because I forget which one it was. It was either like just to show how slow and laggy it was, I played like Iron Maiden and a Metallica riff, and I forget which one they ended up picking, but they decided to name the firmware update after that song because it was me demonstrating how it just straight could not handle it.
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there.
We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like
me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for I gonna lie.
Don't play with it, take that shit seriously.
Oh, that's awesome. Also, I'm going to share the title for this article on the Fisher-Price item. Fisher-Price's wearable baby monitor is an unreliable rash machine. The only thing it reliably did was cause eczema breakouts.
Yep.
I love it. It was called the Sproutling.
Yes. There's basically no evidence that thing ever existed. I also don't want to give the impression, by the way, that I love being mean to things. I really don't. These two things deserved what they got here. I do try to be nice.
Yeah, because you don't want to just be mean for the sake of being mean,
no,
because there's no
fun
point to it. Right, but you need to be realistic. In fact, you know, even the headlines, I think they're funny, but they're really not that inflammatory. No. They're just, this is not the thing. This is not going to do what you thought it was going to do. So, and if you make a good product, you're going to get a good review. That's the way I look at it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, oh man. So as we're actually getting on close to the hour mark here, but I really wanted to cover, at least in the main episode, we're going to talk about some other things over in the Patreon episodes. Listeners, if you want to hear the rest of this conversation when we're done, we're going to go over to Patreon. You can go over to patreon.com/40Watt Podcast. That is 40Watt Podcast. Where for $5 a month, you can support the show, make sure this happens, and you can get bonus content every week when new episodes drop, where I ask some of the harder-hitting questions, and we talk about things we don't want the rest of the world to know, so you can be exclusive in the exclusive club with us. But we talked about a little bit before we started recording, because so when I saw you at NAMM, you were going through some wrist issues and some hand issues and not really being able to play, and it, you know, it's one of those things that I don't think we talk about enough as guitar players and musicians, our physical health when it comes to the way we play guitar. So how's that coming along for you?
Getting a little better. You know, so right before I shipped out for CES at the beginning of January, I lost feeling in two of the fingers on my fretting hand. Very important. my index and my middle finger. If it was the pinky, it'd probably been a little bit easier, but
right. You could have survived. You could do the Django Reinhardt thing. You'd be okay.
But, it was a very unfortunate timing, and it made playing guitar all but impossible. And as a guy who's not just a guitarist, but a writer, that's my primary thing. It made writing very hard. I was more or less typing with like one and a half hands for 2 months. But Things are on the mend. We're hopefully avoiding surgery, which I'm really thrilled about. Anytime I don't have to go under a knife, I feel pretty good. I'll call that a win. So we're like maybe 80% sensation back in my fingers. Like, not all the way there, but it's there. I can play guitar again. I'm getting my dexterity back. I will say, you know, I've gone through periods of my life where I play less guitar for whatever reason. I'm sure everybody does who is like, you fall off for whatever purpose.
Right.
You know, when I had my first child, I fell off because it was difficult to find time and you didn't want to wake the baby and all that sort of stuff. I also, until shortly after I had a kid, had one guitar amp, the same amp that I've had since high school, that was 120-watt 212. Like,
kidding? That's a lullaby machine.
not really appropriate. Also, my neighbors often didn't care for it.
Screw them.
Yeah. Well, not screw them. At that point, I was living in a buddy of mine's house. He had rented us the first floor, and he was living in the basement. So,
gotcha. Yeah, okay.
Didn't want to upset him. If it was just
be nice.
I don't want to piss off my neighbors generally, but I've had other neighbors that I wouldn't have cared about. Him, I cared. So, like, that did things. I think when I first stopped being in a band, I stopped playing for a while. Quit my band and effectively broke it up because nobody was willing to organize things if I wasn't going to. I think I stopped playing for almost a year, honestly. Like, because it was just like it had become so miserable by the end of it that I didn't want to do it. But being physically unable to play guitar for like 2 months.
Yeah.
Made me realize how much I love it and how much I miss it. Like, how did I ever go that long without playing it? What was wrong with you? You could do it, and you just didn't. You ungrateful son of a bitch.
This is such a wild concept to me because guitar, since I learned guitar, may be the most consistent thing in my entire life. There was a point where with the first 10 years of me playing guitar, I did not miss a day of playing guitar. For the first 10 years. And then I still think the longest I've ever gone without playing guitar is about 4 days. It's been the most consistent thing in my life. Lots of other hobbies and pursuits have come and gone and go in varying degrees of my interest, like video games are one of those things that I'm like, oh, I get really into games for a little while. Then it's like, I'm just going to play Sudoku for a year. And that's the closest thing to a video game because I play it on my phone. Sudoku is not even a video game. It's just the electronic version of this handwritten game. And y'all shut up. I love Sudoku. It's amazing. You should try it. It's good for your brain.
Yeah.
So I heard all of you snickering out there. But I think it's important for us to look at this because, you know, you're worried about carpal tunnel. And you told me before we started, they were like, no, you have carpal tunnel. And
yes,
it's like
they're like, well, you do have carpal tunnel, but also you have herniated discs and spinal stenosis in your neck. So it could be that as well. I didn't mention this, I have spinal stenosis in both sides. So it's a lot of fun. Both in the neck and the lumbar.
Oh, no.
And I've herniated discs at both ends, too. I'm a mess. Let's just be clear. I'm a mess.
You're on your way to being a bionic man.
Oh, God. Part of me is just like, can you just, like, cut here, put me in a glass jar, and, like, give me a robot body. Fine.
I mean, we're close.
I might take him up on it at this point. Man, I don't know. But yeah, they were talking about neck surgery, and I was like, ooh, no. Not really thrilled about that idea. So, yeah, been doing the physical therapy and OT thing. It's real eye-opener about how much I have let things go in certain ways. And,
right.
You know, this... I knew some of this beforehand, but this is kind of like really draw my attention that I have a lot of like bad habits when it comes to playing guitar. Like, again, in part goes back to this reflexive hatred of all things guitar histrionics as a teenager. You know, I took guitar lessons, but I was really not super interested. I was like, I've got some power chords and I know the pentatonic scale. I'm fucking good, bro. Leave me alone. And so like, I never developed a lot of the proper techniques for playing that you really should. And I've 100% done like damage to my wrist and my hand from poor playing posture and poor playing techniques. And I'm honestly right now as a 41-year-old man, as someone who's been playing guitar for 25, 26 years or whatever it is. No, longer than that. God, I can't do math. A very long time. It doesn't matter. trying to unlearn a lot of these things is borderline impossible.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to go back and relearn things. And this is why I tell, you know, I've had students in the past. I don't do lessons anymore. I just don't have time. I loved giving lessons. I actually found I learned more giving lessons than I ever did taking lessons.
Absolutely.
But I see players that do the, you know, they wear their guitars really low, putting their wrists at bad angles, or they only play downstrokes because James Hetfield is their hero. It's like, you've got to develop some better techniques. Yes, that worked for that person. But it's sort of like I hear singers all the time. People idolize these singers and they want to sing like them. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't want to sing like that because that will destroy your voice. And they'll say, well, that person does it. And does it's like I to those people, I'm like, you know, Adele's had like 3 vocal surgeries, right?
Yeah.
Like the technique will save you from some of those painful futures. And we as guitar players, we as humans, we don't take very good care of ourselves. We're not good at it.
I'm specifically awful at it. I know this.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. Well, I tell you what, that gives us a really great, clean place. We're going to wrap up here. Listeners, be sure to go take care of yourselves. Look at your technique. Look at the way you're playing guitar. Stop hunching over. Some of you are listening to this podcast or watching this podcast right now while with a guitar in your hands. Stop hunching over. This, I'm just telling you now, it's going to mess up your neck very badly. Well, Terrence, I appreciate you coming on. We're going to go over to Patreon. We're going to chat a little more. We're going to talk about, listeners, we're going to talk about convolution reverbs over on the Patreon and how to make them and my plans for making a bunch of convolution reverbs that I then am going to sell to you. No, I don't know if I'm going to sell anything, but I am going to go make a bunch of reverbs. So we're going to talk about how we're going to do that and some tools that will help you do it. But in the meantime, Terrence, where can everybody find you?
Probably the best place at this point is on Instagram. The unfortunately complicated _Terrence_O'Brien_. There's reasons for that, but that's my public Instagram. I am on Twitter, kind of, sort of.
Really?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm not happy about it. It's not a good place to get in touch with me. But it was recommended that maybe I should return when I lost my job. So,
I gotcha.
Maybe see if anybody was looking to hire, kind of thing.
Come over to Threads. Get away from Twitter.
Honestly, I'm not going to Threads either. I think what I realized is I don't need a Twitter replacement because I don't need Twitter either. I've left it twice. I regret going back the first time. I don't need to be there. It's fine. I'll probably be on Twitter for like another 2 weeks and then just decide it's not worth it and leave again.
Oh, Threads is amazing though. I really love Threads because Threads is where I like drink a bottle of wine and then just start shit posting. That's what Threads is. But there's also, it's got a lot of the news sources like Twitter did now. It started to grow again. You know, it had that spike as it, you know, was new, had the shiny on it. And then it sort of died down a little bit as people sort of forgot they had it on their phones. And now we're seeing another rise in it, which I'm really loving because the conversations and the stuff that's happening over there is kind of bonkers. Like,
yeah,
I've had conversations on Threads with Peter Stroud, one of my favorite guitarists of all time, who has no reason to know I exist. But because it was a small enough audience, you actually engage with people. So I've really, really enjoyed that side of it. So come over there. But it's okay that you have the complicated Instagram. It's down in the links below, there, listeners and watchers. So look down in the description or look in the show notes. It's a link. You can just click it. It'll be super easy to find. But we're going to head over to Patreon. And in the meantime, y'all know the rules. First of all, take care of your physical health. But also, take care of yourselves, be kind to each other, and make some noise. This episode is brought to you by the supporters of 40 Watt Podcast over on Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/40wattpodcast, where for as little as $3 per month, you can help support the podcast and get every episode ad-free. For $5 a month, you'll get every episode ad-free, as well as a bonus episode every week. I can't overstate how thankful I am for the support of my patrons, and hope you'll consider joining the team and helping keep this show on the road.